in the paper. Now I must... So you are challenging the Klecks Company? The pencil hung poised over her notebook. Simply delivering the mail, Miss Cripslock, just like I said I'd do, said Moist in firm, manly tones. But it's rather strange, is it not, that a man on horseback is more reliable than a... Please, Miss Cripslock, we are the post office, said Moist in his best, high-minded voice. We don't go in for petty rivalry. We're sorry to hear that our colleagues in the Klecks Company are experiencing temporary difficulties with their machinery. We fully sympathise with their plight. And if they would like us to deliver their messages for them, we would, of course, be happy to sell them some stamps. Soon to be available in penny, two-penny, five-penny, ten-penny, and $1 values, available here at your post office ready-gummed. Incidentally, we intend eventually to flavour the gum in licorice, orange, cinnamon, and banana flavours, but not strawberry because I hate strawberries. He could see her smile as she wrote this down. Then she said, I did hear you correctly, did I? You are offering to carry Klecks messages? Certainly. Ongoing messages can be put on the trunk in Stolat. Helpfulness is our middle name. Are you sure it's not cheekiness? Said Saccharissa, to laughter from the crowd. I don't understand you, I'm sure, said Moist. Now, if you will... You're cocking a snook at the Klecks people again, aren't you? Said the journalist. Ah, that must be a journalistic term, said Moist. I've never owned a snook, and even if I did, I wouldn't know how to cock it. And now, if you will excuse me, I have the mail to deliver, and ought to leave before Boris eats somebody again.
Can I ask you just one last thing? Will your soul be unduly diminished if Otto takes a picture of you departing?
I suppose I can't stop you out here, provided my face isn't very clear, said Moist, as Mr. Pump cupped his pottery hands to make a step. The priest is very hot on that, you know.
Yes, I expect the priest is, said Miss Cripslock, making sure the inverted commas clanged with irony. Besides, by the look of that creature, it may be the last chance we get. It looks like death on four legs, Mr. Lipvig.
The crowd fell silent as Moist mounted. Boris merely shifted his weight a little. Look at it like this, Moist thought. What have you got to lose? Your life? You've already been hanged. You're into angel time, and you're impressing the hell out of everyone. Why are they buying stamps? Because you're giving them a show.
Just say the word, mister, said one of Hobson's men, hauling on the end of a rope. When we let him go, we ain't hanging around.
Wait a moment, said Moist, quickly. He'd seen a figure at the front of the crowd. It was wearing a figure-hugging grey dress, and as he watched, it blew a neurotic cloud of smoke at the sky, gave him a look, and shrugged.
Dinner tonight, Mr. Dearheart? He shouted.
Heads turned. There was a ripple of laughter and a few cheers. For a moment, she flashed him a look that should have left his shadow on the smoking remains of the wall opposite, and then she gave a curt nod. Who knows? It could be peaches underneath.
Let him go, boys, said Moist, his heart soaring.
The men dived away. The world was still for a breath, and then Boris sprang from docility into a mad, rearing dance, back legs clattering across the flagstones, hooves pouring at the air.
Wonderful! Hold it!
The world went white. Boris went mad. Chapter 7A. Post haste. The nature of Boris the horse. Foreboding tower. Mr. Lipvig cools off. The lady with buns on her ears. Invitation accepted. Mr. Robinson's box. A mysterious stranger. Hobson had tried Boris as a racehorse, and he would have been a very good one were it not for his unbreakable habit, at the off, of attacking the horse next to him and jumping the railings at the first bend. Moist clapped one hand onto his hat, wedged his toes into the belly band, and hung on to the reins as Broadway came at him all at once, carts and people blurring past, his eyeballs pressing into his head. There was a cart across the street, but there was no possibility of steering Boris. Huge muscles bunched, and there was a long, slow, silent moment as he drifted over the cart. Hooves slid over the cobbles ahead of a trail of sparks when he landed again, but he recovered by sheer momentum and accelerated. The usual crowd around the Hubwoods gate scattered, and there, filling the horizon, were the plains. They did something to Boris's mad horse brain. All that space, nice and flat, with only a few easily jumped obstacles, like trees. He found extra muscle and speeded up again, bushes and trees and carts flying towards him. Moist cursed the bravado with which he'd ordered the saddle taken away. Every part of his body already hated him. But in truth, Boris, once you got past the pineapple, wasn't too bad a ride. He'd hit his rhythm, a natural single-footed gait, and his burning eyes were focused on the blueness.
His hatred of everything was for a moment subsumed in the sheer joy of space. Hobson was right. You couldn't steer him with a